Hello and welcome back to Blacker Couch Reviews. I'm your host, Christina. We're back to discuss a movie review, Dune Part 2, which premiered March 1st of 2024 all over the United States. It's been getting a lot of positive reviews. Seems to already be doing well at the box office. My daughter really wanted to see this movie. I said, why not? Let's go see it this weekend. And I'm glad we did because it was a really, really, really good movie. I gave it a 10 out of 10. I was not aware of all of the additional casting news. I haven't been following all of the movie. Yeah, that used to be my jam, very much so. And then somewhere along the line, I slipped off. So I kind of went into this rather blind. But because we do have new cast members, I feel the need to shout them out. I'm not going to go over the cast list for Dune 1 because we know who they are and their returning characters. But some additional standouts for this movie is Austin Butler, who played, it was Fade, because he faded out of the plot very quickly. Full spoilers, by the way, if you're not aware, I will put that also in the episode title so you can't be like, oh my god, even though if you're listening to me by now, you should know I do not hold on to spoilers as far as what I'm reviewing. Florence Pugh, I think she was the Princess Irulan, I think was her name, and then Christopher walk in as Shaddam the Fourth. I don't think anyone's gonna walk away from this movie not feeling the highlight was the cinematography in itself, the realness of that experience of being in the desert. There were moments I was honestly like, oh my gosh, I can't breathe. I need some water because it was too much sand on the screen. Yeah, it was a masterpiece. There's no other words to describe. It's very much what its predecessor was, but even better. And that is an accomplishment in a sequel because not many sequels can outdo the original. And this sequel certainly did that. Let's go into plot first. Then we'll talk about maybe our favorite moments and then we'll talk about any type of critiques I may have. I think I had one or two very small ones and not really hurting absolutely anything in this story. I will say I was looking for the perfect bathroom break and I'm glad I did go to the restroom beforehand and did not drink a whole bunch of beer like my seat partner, because yeah, there was not an opportune moment to be like, yeah, I can go ahead and miss this 5 minutes. You didn't want to miss any of this movie. And I'm still probably going to want to see it again just after I start to read up a little bit more on the lore, because I recalled after the first movie I did so, but I don't remember it all. So I'll need to do a refresher. As far as plot goes, Paul is now with the Freeman. He has a goal that is opposite his mother, even though at first it seemed they had the same goal, which was to utilize the Freeman to get them on their side because they think that he is this prophet that's foretold. And then we can utilize them to go against the Emperor as well as Harkonnen for what they did to his father and the people of his community. But through his own agency, he realizes that he is born to be manipulated for other purposes, and he very much wants to find his own purpose. And he finds that in his relationship with Chani, who is the niece of my favorite character, which is Javier Bardem's, oh, what is his name? Because I always forget it. Stigler, his character. They are brought back to where all of the leaders meet. And while they don't have any interest in this prophecy, they think it's a bit of bullshit. They're also in the North. We find out there are a lot more people, Freemen, in the South, where no one thought life could exist because they couldn't see it there. Nor did they think to go down to the trenches and take a peek. They do take an interest in his mother, Lady Jessica, because snap and crackle and pop. What do they call them? Reverend Mother. Thank you. Thinking my own brain. Reverend Mother is dying, and they think that she, due to her training, can take over. So that's exactly what she does. But she does not allow them to know that she's pregnant, which turns out to be a problem because it feels as if her taking the water of life while she was pregnant extended her powers not only to her, but to her offspring. And I have to say, because my second standout is Rebecca Ferguson's character, which is why I'm so upset that Silo did not work for me. Man, I hope they make some changes in season two. And maybe I can finally struggle through the rest of season one to make it, because I think she's a brilliant actress and I really, really, really like her. And how she just kept talking to her daughter the whole time in her belly and didn't give a fuck who was watching.
You fucking crazy, man. You sound insane. Do you realize that? You should be medic.
That's some pretty crazy ass shit. It's like, I got my mother who's a witch. Slash, I don't know what else to describe her. I have a sister that is gonna be some type of Jedi. And everyone is gearing me up to be this chosen one, yet I don't know if I'm down to clown with the immense pressure of being a messiah.
Put your faith in the light.
I do love that it's a point of contention between him and Chani continuously throughout the entire movie, because she ends up seeing him for who he is as a person. And despite all of the continued power that he's really been given, he steps away from that. And I like the culmination of that moment where they're going back and forth, niece and uncle, where she's not really falling for this predestination, the prophecies, which were man-made. And despite whatever powers are going on by fucking around with this spice and the water of life, it is essentially gallivating everyone around an idea that's a religion. And the indoctrination of the religion is to enact warfare, as well as to indoctrinate others to believe what you believe. And as she pointed out, it starts with the fearful. They're the easiest to convert because of their fear. Just watching the whole exploration of creating a religion and then utilizing that religion for your own political goals. Yeah, all of that certainly is something Paul and Chani continue to, well, she certainly knows that it's a path that seems to be put upon him, but reconciles that inside he is humble. And because of that, when he decides he wants to become a Freeman and he makes the announcement, because everyone or his Stigler is all like, oh, it was a miracle. She survived. It's all as written. And you have a homegirl over there, Chani, being like, look, this shit happened because, you know, she's good at what she does. But I do like that he sided with her and said, yeah, this is something that has an explanation that is not supernatural or prophesized. And maybe getting to the core of who I am and becoming a leader and becoming someone worthy of others following by starting from the bottom and rising organically, despite everyone just willingly giving me this role. I thought that was all really well done. And the reason why she ends up falling in love with him and being the one to give him the proper tools to allow him to actually become a Freeman. He thinks he does when he gets his name, which is Mahadib, which is the name that everyone gets or learns to fear very quickly. Say I walk like a king, talk like a king. You can act around now, say the same thing. They chasing the fame, they all want the name. But they ain't got what's running through these veins. Say I walk like a king. I think everybody laughed out loud when he was like, oh, he's just being humble. He don't want to say that he's the right, because that's exactly how it is. With religion, it doesn't matter if the prophet tries to tell everyone, no, I'm a sham. It becomes more about their need to believe in what they believe that is inspiring you. It's very well done and well conceived, the full exploration of that. And I do really, really love that Chani in the end kind of still rejects that. Even her name, which is, oh, what was her name? I know it means spring desert or something. Spring before the desert or the water of the desert. I should have wrote it down, but it was a movie, so there was no notes to be taken. And she doesn't want to assimilate. And even in the end, she still does not assimilate to these ideas as they're being presented. But she does want the word I'm looking for, the liberation of her people. And she will always fight for her people. So while she's not a part of the plan is also what it is because it still aligns with her goals. So I like that human aspect to it between these two characters. And then their love story becomes the impetus for him finding the resolve he needs. But not only that, he runs into his friend, which is Josh Brolin's character, Gurney Halleck. He runs into him randomly. Well, he saves him from the others that he was working for. And he puts it in his idea too of, you've got 200 fucking people. Are you kidding? There's millions more. Do you know what you could do with these trained warriors to go against the Empire? He's a military man, so he's only thinking of that. But she's still trying to keep him away from this future that's going to take him further and further. I love the line that she gave him. I will love you as long as you are you. So you start not being the person I fell in love with. This is no longer a thing. And I like that clarification. And I don't know if the end signified that she no longer saw that person, because I feel like he's still there. Other than the political changes that he made, right now, when he decided to go against the war, maybe she's just going to still be the one that's on the ground and he's the one that's handling things from a more higher upper echelon of power situation. So they're still, despite as much love between them, separated by their core beliefs. But he gets it in his head that he also needs to fight back. And then he finds out that he has an arsenal at his hands of nuclear weapons that are always given to each house. And because he knows where those weapons are, they're even more equipped to make a major blow against the person that took out House Atreides. I do appreciate that he chose to consult the man he killed And there was so much ritual around the man he killed. Like, when you're a freeman, you're a freeman. Whether someone took your place or not, like, everyone touching his body, Jomzy, I think was his name, and how they take the water from him and they put it into this other well of water, which is all of the deceased souls. That was pretty special. And it's him that says, you know, you have to go to the future. You can't evade the future no matter how much you are trying to evade this future. And he ends up going south, even though his mother wanted him to go much earlier, because she went there to prepare for him. Not only saying that there's someone that's going to show up that's going to be a male that's going to take the water of life, even though no male has ever survived this. I also need to get everyone prepared for your arrival to know and to continue to spread your religion. And I like the idea that there's different competing religions going on down there, and that both of the Benesenares, I'm never going to say those, I always say Benis, that they are fully aware of and utilize that as a power tool. So that's another fascinating reflection of life, of how one's religious beliefs can be are taken on by those who require it the most, because they're living life of the most suffering. But that it is the people in power that manipulate that faith for their own gains and their own ideas. And right now, Paul hasn't crossed any lines, I feel, in his path, because after he takes the water of life, she shows up, she being Chani. He's not dead, but he's pretty much close to being dead. And it's Jessica who says, look, I ain't got time to hear this bullshit about how you don't believe, whether you want to or not. It's not a requirement. Bitch, put your tears in that water and give it to him so he can wake the fuck up. And that's exactly what he did. 'Cause I'm your had an indication that his hand was not going to be free, because his mother said, you want to stay because of love, but you need to keep your hand free for what else needs to come. And as soon as I saw that princess lady going around talking about how she was trained and how they were this, that, and the other thing, I just knew it was going to be the emperor's daughter that he was going to have to marry to ascend to the next level of power that he needs to be at to go against the other houses, because that's the whole initial point of why the emperor turned on them, is because they felt that House Atreides, that his father was a threat because he didn't lead with the same ideas that others did. And because the Bennies didn't have a whole bunch of faith in Paul being the leader, since he was born a generation earlier, from what I recall, there's a lot of conflict about his rise to power. Now, in the meantime of all of this happening, because we do get the ultimate win, there are a few bits and pieces along the way, which one is the way in which Batista, I forgot his character's name, how he fails miserably at securing the spice trade because of the rise of Paul. And because of it, he becomes more desperate. There was that one scene, and I guess I should already put that out there now. This is one of my small complaints, is Dave Batista's character. He was very lost and maybe it wasn't his fault. There was a lot of more compelling people around, including his own cousin. So he just came off like a bumbling idiot who didn't fully understand because he felt in his mind he was so much better that he couldn't entertain the idea that these rats that were kicking their ass were more than just maybe, I don't know, rats.
You know nothing, Jon Snow.
Unlike with the Baron, whose brutality we only hear screams of and then see the aftermath, his brutality just felt much like someone with a small dick trying to overcompensate. And so when he jumped off, talking about, we're going to go after them, and then 5 seconds, they show up and he's already running back to the ship.
Why are you running?
Which leads to Faye being introduced to take his place because you're failing me. He has to kiss his boot. And he lets him off of his leash during his birthday, I suppose. The Bennies are interested in him as well, because they really don't have a lot of faith in the Paw angle, so they want to go ahead with their breeding program to continue on a legacy that's going to fit within their plans and their timeline that they got going on. But it turns out that he's not the best one for the job. What was they trying to say when he did the lady, like, he killed his mother? He hates women. He feeds parts to the vampire groupies he has. My daughter absolutely loved this character. I think she just liked the actor and was biasly into, because I was like, what the fuck are you talking about? This guy, he looks like he's got major problems. But their only interest was the fact that they can control him and rein in his more base appetites with their control over him. And that's what the whole Lady Marjorie or Margot was sent to actually do, getting pregnant in the meantime. So he also was someone that I thought was going to be a little bit more formidable than he ended up being, especially when he said, take off his, you know, I'm going to let you have someone that you can actually fight and show everyone who you really are. And it was kind of, he took him out pretty cool. I loved when they went from the black to the white. I mean, I was just sitting there having a visual orgasm during every part of the Harkonnen scenes, because visually, absolutely, ridiculously stunning how they went from the black to the white. Like, there's just I bow down before thee. Back to the storyline. Did y'all expect the whole entire family tree to be taken out in one movie? I thought they was going to have him for the big bad guy. And the fact that they took him out at the end of the movie made me happy, because I was thinking, well, he's not that very formidable. But maybe they can bust out. Maybe he'll drink some Kool-Aid. I don't know how this plot goes, so I had no clue. But nah. He said, I'm going to fuck with your girl. And he was like, oh, is that right?
You are dead, dead, dead. You are dead, dead, dead.
Thought you were hot. Guess what? You're not.
You are dead, dead, dead.
Honestly, I don't know why he was that cocky after he told Benny to shut the fuck up in that demonic voice that him and his mother be possessing at all times when they feel like it. Just all of the times. That was one of the highlights of the movie. Every time that demon voice came out, I was like, oh shit. That and in the moment that the Emperor received that scroll and it just dropped.
Oh, now you fucked up. Now you fucked up. Now you fucked up. You have fucked up now. Now you fucked up. Now you fucked up. Now you fucked up. Now you fucked up.
When Paul did take the Water of Life, he saw a vision of his sister Aaliyah. Who is that actress? That's going to bother me, and I didn't Google it, but I know that actress from somewhere, And I'm guessing she's got a part to play. But she has a belief in him, and she seems to have a lot of questions that mother be telling her to shut the fuck up and stop asking. My daughter says, oh, okay, we talking to an infant. That's fine. It's totally fine. So yeah, he ends up taking the throne by saying, I'm going to spare your... And the daughter did offer that earlier. Like, we should do peace right when everyone else chooses to go in another direction. I think that the Bennies definitely want to utilize her, though. And the fact that Paul already has no interest in her as a person... I just love that he made no attempt to hide where his true feelings lie. Like, I'm going to take your daughter's hand in marriage and secure your bloodline. And then looks over at his wifey. Please don't go. Please don't go. Please don't go. I do love that he put his signet ring back on from his father. And the emperor had to kiss that shit on his knees. And it was also what he put in. I mean, I loved everything about the last half of this movie. There are parts where I thought it was just going to end. And I was like, wow, this shit is still going. And because I don't have a reference, I didn't know where it was. I was like, I knew there was a holy war coming. But I kept thinking at several points that they already started that shit. And it was just going to go off and we're going to watch the third movie. But yeah, I think this is his... ascension, but I think he comes with a price. And unfortunately, we see that when Chani remains on Arrakis. And I thought she was supposed to go with him and be his official concubine, because I do remember that part. But it is a movie versus the book. And I think there's something to be said about that, right? That I'm not going to choose this path with you because I can't get behind the holy in the war that you're doing, even though I would have happily helped you fight the war. And I can't stand next to you marrying someone else, even if you don't love that person and you don't give that heart to your person. That's my role. And now you're using it as a political tool. Yeah, there's a lot of things between them. Because she could have left a long time ago, even before that fight. But there was so many unspoken words between them. Clearly, she loves him too much to walk away. But I don't think she can sit and watch as he becomes someone else. Or is that the moment where she said you became someone else? I don't know. But it leaves the door open for it. So I'll be interested in this. Listen to other reviews. Like I said, what was the highlights? Javier Bardem's character. It was just so fun. And the idea that he got a grandfather worm, that part was beyond. Every time I saw them on the worms, I was like, that's awesome. I would love to travel in that mode of transport. I have to say everything with a Harakin only because the visuals were just hitting on every single level that it needed to hit on. Even if some of the things weren't explained, the debauchery of that house, the bomb to find out that his mother is the daughter of Baron Hunniker or Harakin, which makes Paul his grandson. And then by the end of the movie, he killed both of his cousins. Well, he killed one of his cousins. And then that was the other part. I swear to God, when I saw that scene, I didn't want it. As soon as it happened, I didn't want it. As soon as I saw him run into that chopper and then up the hill comes Josh Brolin's character, I was like, oh. Y'all feel too old to be fighting right now. it just didn't work for me. I thought he and Chani were gonna see eye to eye, but the minute he put on that ring, he was like, shit, you're doing what the fuck I want you to do, so I'm not on your side, ma'am. And she was alone, and even Jessica was like, you got him to where he needed to be, and you will always have that part. But I think she has more of a role to play, because I don't think the part he's about to play with the princess. I think she's going to try to control him, and that's going to be unfortunate for him, because he seems to have a lot of power as far as needing to thread a needle when it comes to guiding the galaxy to the path it needs to be on, while not having the person he most wants to be with. But he does have a good rapport with the culture, and I'm so glad that they went the route that he chose to legitimately become a Freeman, because he wanted to be someone worthy of her. And that's pretty much how it started. Everything kind of going off rails is for mother and son to choose love, or love to be the impotence for their decisions later on. And he does leave her with the words, as long as I am breathing, which is the same thing she said to him, I'll always love you, which is very sweet, because I'm in the loving mood because of Rishon. I'm not going to go through everything that happened in the movie, of course, because this is just a review. I do think everyone should go see it. I certainly am very geeked, very, very, very geeked for part 3, whenever that's going to happen. Don't know. I'll wait for someone to tell me. And it looks like the box office is doing pretty well. I think I said that up the top, but really well, and the critics' response are largely received rave reviews, from an A+ to an A++. There's not much to complain about in this film. There really isn't. You're not gonna walk in this. This is the type of movie you go to movies to see. And with that raving bit of fan farewell, I think we're gonna go sign off the podcast. If you have any lingering thoughts, want to send feedback, recordcouch@gmail.com, or can leave a comment for any other show that I do, my social media will be below. Like, share, subscribe. Until the next time, peace, hair grease, and black girl magic.